It's on. It's on. There's no sound. Play with the rabbit ears.
Commercial break.
The government has now banned the carrying of spears.
Stop about every 1,000 miles. Ain't asking too much, is it?
It has been established that persons who have recently died have been returning to life and committing acts of murder.
Fuck you too!
Welcome to the Don't Panic radio show. My name is Steve Vinson. Sitting right over there is Paul Schultz.
Good evening.
It's that time of year that conjures, I don't know, when it starts to get a little bit cool out and the leaves start to change and you get that like crinkle and the rustle of the leaves blowing across the ground. I can't help but get that feeling of when I used to be a kid. I did used to be a kid at one point, whether you believe it or not.
I was there. It's true. He was.
I was a kid. And when you're a kid, you know, everything is real.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing is real. It's like anything is possible and nothing is possible. But thinking about, well, I used to think about what is real and what's not real. And now having kids, it's brought that all back up again for me, because they ask questions that makes me stop and go, is that real? Is that not real?
Right, right.
I don't really remember.
Absolutely. And now more than ever as an adult, I find myself, I have kids as well. I find myself asking that same question, and they won't even be asking me, is it real? I wonder what is real and what isn't anymore, you know? What we knew 20 years ago, you know, we've learned more of what's real and what isn't. We've seen more, you know, on microscopic levels and whatnot. So how do we know that we don't know what's real and what isn't?
Well, when I was younger, I thought I knew.
Mm-hmm.
You probably think you do too, don't you? That's the Rock on Tours. Anyway, so I've always been a skeptic. I mean, you know me. I've never believed in ghosts or monsters or whatever. I just always figured, you know, there's an explanation for everything.
Well, just because there's an explanation for it doesn't mean it's not real.
I think Nirvana actually said that.
That doesn't bode well for me at all. Oh.
Wait, no, that's not. Hang on. No, I'm hearing in my ear from our producers. No, what Nirvana actually said was, just because you're paranoid don't mean they're not after you. Okay, sorry,
that's
I stand corrected. Actually, I'm sitting corrected. But
that's right.
So, I've always been pretty skeptical. I always had fun sitting around the campfire telling ghost stories or sitting in your parents' basement or my parents' living room, because we didn't have a basement. Like telling these stories, and everybody, what always fascinated me was everybody had a story.
Yeah.
Like there was nobody that said, damn, I've never seen a ghost or experienced something that I thought might be supernatural or that I couldn't explain.
Right.
You know?
Well, we've also had like bonfire sessions. What we've discussed, something about fire and night and woods brings out that. I don't know why. That goes all the way back to when we were cavemen, I think. There's just something about the primalness of it all brings it out. And then we try to explain it away with all of our science. And there's still, all right, you know, we'll go, all right, well, that's what caused that to happen. But deep down inside, we still really don't believe it.
Well, as a graduate of an engineering and science school, I just want to say, I mean, all that science, I can't understand it. It's just my job, like 5 days a week. You know?
Glad you said that, because I was going to do it.
Science. So my fascination with the supernatural, actually, I would say it began with church, because this whole idea that there's a devil. I mean, I don't remember much about what they taught me about Jesus. I remember everything they taught me about Satan.
Right.
And this whole idea that there is a Satan and there is a devil, and if you tempt him, he will show up, for me, became very real when I was in, I think I was in second grade.
I think I know where this is going.
Springfield Elementary School. I hope you do.
I know where this is going.
If you don't, I've wasted my breath the 500 times I've told you this story.
Please.
Okay, so I'm 40 some odd years old, right? And this is when I was 8, which puts it 38 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
There was the story that went around, and I think the story still goes around.
It does.
That if you look into a mirror in a dark room and you recite the words, "I don't believe in Bloody Mary," 3 times, Bloody Mary will appear and she will kill you. If you don't believe me, do a simple YouTube search for Bloody Mary. And you might have to filter out the Drake recipe results, but.
Well, I remember years ago when, before the advent of Google, and I went up to the search box on my interweb, and I typed in Bloody Mary 3 times and hit enter. And a website pops up with this fucking bloody ass chick with a knife.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm sending this to Steve. And I sent it to you. And your response was, "You son of a bitch."
Just like, hey, that. Man. There are some lines you just don't cross, all right?
I try to, you know, you put up a keep off the grass sign and I'm going to play soccer. So.
There are some buttons you just don't push.
That's one of them.
So thought I. So a little young 8-year-old Steve was dared. I believe someone dared me. So Joe Ashcraft had gone into... We were talking about the story. And I believe it was near this time of year. Maybe mid to late October. Mm-hmm. And... We were laughing about it, but Joe, being very religious, said, "You know, you shouldn't mess with that stuff," says Joe. I was like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "Jesus, devil, Satan, all that shit." I was like, "Well, if you got Jesus on your side, you shouldn't maybe be worried." Of course, at 8, he was like, "Motherfucker,
because that's how he
fucking
talked.
Tempt me." He's like, yeah. He's
Joe,
like,
Joe was street like, before there was street.
That's right. especially you talk about Jesus.
He was OJ.
You don't talk about my homie Jay.
Original Jesus.
JC's my boy. So
he's my main man.
So Joe went into the boys' bathroom, shut the door, and... Of course, the rest of us stood with the door open out into the hallway.
Yes.
So, like any red-blooded 8-year-old boy, we all blocked the door.
Right.
we heard Joe say, "I don't believe in Bloody Mary. I don't believe in Bloody Mary. I don't believe in Bloody Mary." And then, like, all right, open the door. He like tried to push on the door. We're holding the door. He's like, "Open the door. Let me out. Let me out." And we're like, "Did you see her?" And he's like, just let me out. Just let me out. Like, did you? What happened? He's like, just let me out. Just let me out. Finally, and Joe, motherfucker, I don't know if you ever played football.
Yeah.
But that man was strong.
He got his strength from the Lord, much like Samson did.
That's right. Him and his cereal bowl haircut.
Because if any person on this planet ever got strength from the Lord, it would have been Joe.
Joe, exactly. Jesus, then Joe.
That's right.
But I, you know, he put his shoulder into it, and like three mm-hmm. of us went flying, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he came out of there, and he just said, you know, it's like recess time. He's like, let's go outside. He's like, what happened? Tell us what happened. He's like, let's go outside. Come on, let's go play. I was like, mother God. I was like, I gotta try this. He's like, don't. Joe's like, don't even. And like Jim Hicks, who we talked about mm-hmm. a couple of weeks ago. And mm-hmm. I think maybe even Steve Poole. Who I'm Facebook friends with, by the way, Steve Poole.
I was not aware cool guy. I wasn't aware we went to elementary with him.
Well, for the sake of this story, he did.
Well, I'm pretty sure he did. I'm pretty sure he did. But that brings up an interesting point. When you're done, I'll get to it. But please continue. All right.
So I was like, no, I'm gonna try this, and of course these other guys are encouraging me to try it, and Joe's just like, I'm going to recess. Joe walked left. He went out to recess. I don't know, monkey bar, swing set.
Obstacle course. We love you, Joe.
That was the insidest of inside jokes right there.
Yes, it certainly was.
But I was like, well, fuck it, man. I'm doing it. So I go in there, and of course I hear everyone putting their shoulders against the door.
You're going to get it.
Yeah. And it was dark. I mean, it was dark, dark. You know what I mean? Like, you can't see shit.
Yeah. Like country dark when the lights go out.
It ain't city dark. Mm-mm. It's country dark.
It is country dark.
And I looked in the mirror, and I'm just like, you know, just kind of like blowing it off. I'm like, I don't believe in Bloody Mary. I don't believe in Bloody Mary. I don't believe in Bloody Mary. And swear to God, first it was like a pinprick
mm-hmm.
Light. Like today we might say it was like somebody with a laser pointer.
Right. Driving a cat crazy.
Laser pointers didn't exist. And I was like, what? I'm like, I'm looking behind me. I'm seeing, are they opening the door? And then, like that vision when you're like half asleep, half awake, and you like almost go to sleep, but then you wake up,
mm-hmm.
and you still see like this vision.
Mm-hmm.
I see this woman's face, and it's like all crackled up. And all the lines, and first of all, her skin is like gray.
Mm-hmm.
And her hair is stringy and blonde, and her and all the little crackles, the lines in her face are like red, like blood red, and her mouth just opens and is like, rah! And I was like, ma, get me the fuck out of here. So I laid my shoulder down and I just like laid into it. Joe was strong, but I was big.
I was gonna say,
I got the fuck out of there.
I never would have held the door against you. It's funny because I think you saw my ex-wife.
Which is funny because she probably wasn't born yet.
No, right. What's so funny is about that is now you and I, even though we live in the same neighborhood, we didn't become friends till junior high, or as the kids call it, middle school. We knew each other, sure, but we didn't really like hang out or anything. But that story, now you're younger than I am. That story made its way down the halls of Springfield Elementary School. It became an urban legend or suburban legend, as the case
country
may be.
Legend.
A country legend. A rural legend. So, yeah, even though I didn't know you, because I knew Joe, even though cause Joe and I were in a class together for some strange reason, that's how, and Jim, but it trickled down from him, and it was all over the place.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't want to tell you because I knew it would have scared you.
That's crazy. And from that day until, God, I'd have to say until I was like in my late 20s,
mm-hmm.
I would not allow a mirror in my bedroom.
I have actually told my kids that. that Steve never had, there'd never be a, I don't know where he combed his hair because there was never a mirror in his bedroom because he wasn't having that shit.
I combed my hair in the bathroom with the door closed, with the water running.
Yes. Yeah, the same place I comb my hair.
No, my girlfriends, as I got older and found the other way to get dopamine flowing, aside from scaring the shit out of yourself. For you little leaguers out there, we're talking about safe sex.
The safest sex there is. The sex you can have with any woman or guy you ever want. They will never say no.
So, like, I'd be getting with a girl, and she'd have a mirror in her bedroom, and I'd be like, I can't really fall asleep in here.
Yeah.
I was like, it freaked my shit out. Maybe for this show, I should go into my bathroom. Yeah, turn the lights off.
Oh, yeah, we should do that.
I'm going to do that shit right now.
Do that shit right now, ladies and gentlemen. Steve. This may be the last broadcast we ever hear from Steve.
That's
he's,
right.
He's taking his big blue ball into the bathroom.
I'm so scared.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry for the snot.
All right. All right, here we go.
All right, here we go. This is a thing, ladies and gentlemen. All right, he's in the bathroom. All right.
All right, recreating.
All right, do it.
It's not dark enough. Damn.
Close the door.
All right, I got to somehow... I got to cover the laptop so it's super dark. All right, how do I do this? All right, I got to get... All right, hang on. I'll take my shirt off and cover...
Not that way.
It's not dark enough in here.
Oh, that picture's beautiful.
I don't know how to make it. All right. Oh, I know what to do. I'll, Satan.
Is that a sheepskin hanging on your wall? What the hell is that?
Right.
Oh.
Damn, it's still too light.
Is Satan hanging on your wall?
Some more lights out. Hang on a second.
All right. We are hanging on. Shit's about to get real.
All right, hang on. Okay, now it's super dark. Alright, okay. Alright.
I have 9-1 dialed. Okay. So if something happens, I'm pushing that last one.
Screen still. Oh, fuck. Alright. Super dark in here. This light, I gotta cover this light up. Okay. Is it I don't believe in Bloody Mary or just Bloody Mary?
I thought it was you say her name 3 times. I don't believe it's like you say her name. I don't believe in you 3 times like that.
Fucking hair on the back of my neck standing up. I ain't done this since I was 8 years old, man. All right.
The hair on the back of my neck is standing right. up, and I don't have any hair, so here that's it's pretty creepy.
Fuck. <right. laughs> God damn it. Bloody Mary, I don't believe in you. Wait, did I do it right? Wait, I don't believe in Bloody Mary. I don't believe in Bloody Mary. I don't believe in Bloody Shortly after World War II, Soviet researchers sealed 5 prison inmates in an airtight chamber and dosed them with an experimental stimulant gas to test the effects of prolonged sleep deprivation. Their behavior was observed via 2-way mirrors and their conversations monitored electronically. They had been promised their freedom if they could go entirely without sleep for 30 days. The first few days of the experiment passed uneventfully. By the 5th day, however, the subjects began showing signs of stress and were overwhelmed. And it was overheard that they were bemoaning their circumstances. They stopped conversing with their fellow inmates, choosing instead to whisper compromising information about one another into the microphones, apparently in an effort to win the favor of the researchers. Paranoia set in. On the 9th day, the screaming began. first one subject, then another, was observed running around the chamber, screaming at the top of his lungs for hours on end. Equally disconcerting was the reaction of the quieter subjects, who began ripping apart the books they'd been given to read, smearing the pages with feces and plastering them over the mirrored windows so their actions could no longer be observed. Then, just as suddenly, the screaming stopped. The subjects ceased communicating altogether. 3 long days passed without a sound from inside the chamber. Fearing the worst, the researchers addressed the subjects via the intercom. "We are opening the chamber to test the microphones," they said. "Step away from the door and lie flat on the floor, or you will be shot. Compliance will earn one of you your immediate freedom." A voice from inside answered, "We no longer want to be freed." 2 more days passed without contact of any kind as the scientists debated what to do next. Finally, they decided to terminate the experiment. At midnight on the 15th day, the stimulant gas was flushed from the chamber and replaced with fresh air in preparation for the subject's release. Far from being pleased at the prospect of leaving the chamber, the subjects began screaming as if in fear for their lives. They begged to have the gas turned back on. Instead, the researchers unsealed the door to the chamber and sent armed soldiers inside to retrieve them. Nothing could have prepared them for the carnage they witnessed upon entering. 1 subject was found dead, lying face down in 6 inches of bloody water. Chunks of his flesh had been torn off and stuffed into the floor drain. All of the test subjects were found to have been severely mutilated, in fact. What's worse, the wounds appeared to be self-inflicted. They had ripped open their own abdomens and disemboweled themselves with their bare hands. Some had even eaten their own flesh. The 4 who were still alive seemed terrified of falling asleep and refused to leave the chamber, again pleading with the researchers to turn the gas back on. When the soldiers attempted to remove the inmates by force, they fought back so ferociously they couldn't believe their eyes. One suffered a ruptured spleen and lost so much blood there was literally nothing left of his heart to pump, yet continued flailing for a full 3 minutes until his lifeless body collapsed. The remaining subjects were restrained and transported to a medical facility for treatment. The first to be operated on fought so furiously against being anesthetized that he tore muscles and broke bones during the struggle. As soon as the anesthetic took effect, his heart stopped, and he died. The rest underwent surgery without sedation. Far from feeling any pain, however, they laughed hysterically on the operating table, so hysterically that the doctors, perhaps fearing for their own sanity, administered a paralytic agent to immobilize them. After surgery, the survivors were asked why they had mutilated themselves and why they so desperately wanted to go back on the stimulant gas. Each, in turn, gave the same answer. "I must remain awake," The researchers considered euthanizing them to obliterate every trace of the failed experiment, but were overruled by their commanding officer, who ordered that it be resumed immediately, with three of the researchers joining the inmates in the sealed chamber. Horrified at the prospect, the chief researcher pulled out a pistol and shot the commanding officer point blank. He then turned and shot one of the two surviving subjects. Pointing his gun at the last one left alive, he asked, "What are you? I must know." "Have you forgotten so easily?" the subject said, smiling. "We are you. We are the madness that lurks within you all, begging to be free at every moment in your deepest animal mind. We are what you hide from in your beds every night. We are what you sedate into silence and paralysis when you go to the nocturnal haven where we cannot tread." The researcher fired a bullet into his heart. The EEG monitor flatlined as the subject murmured these last words, "So nearly free."
Terror fills the screen with horror. The Night of the Seagulls. Where are these women going, dressed in mourning, leading a young girl to sacrifice? Mystery surrounds the horsemen from the ancient past. The Night of the Seagulls.
Let's go.
I set you free.
They're nearly here. Get away, sir. It is said they died 6 centuries ago. I'm being given up to them so others may be saved. Hurry, you must get away, sir.
I won't leave you here. Nothing could stand up against the cruelty and the fanaticism of the dead horseman. The Night of the Seagulls. With Maria Costi, Victor Petit, Sandra Mozorowski, Julie James. The Night of the Seagulls.
What's that?
A beast of the sea. Must be a god belonging to some unknown culture.
What's going to happen to us now?
I don't know. But this idol is responsible for all the sacrifices.
Directed by Armando de Osorio, a Pro Films and Ancla Century Films co-production.
All our times have come.
it's funny that you would bring up earlier about, you know, the suburban legend of Bloody Mary and how you're a skeptic. And, you know, as am I. I don't believe anything anybody tells me. The only thing I believe are the things that I experience empirically. I have experienced things that I cannot fully explain. And it has been happening and following me for well over a decade. As you know, this is before I lived here and when I was married, I lived in a different apartment with my, you know, my current ex-wife and my kids. And for a while, our mutual friend Carl had a girlfriend from Minnesota who was a self-proclaimed medium. And for reasons that I'm not going to go into, she lived with us for a short period of time. While she was living with us, that's after she moved in, she announced that she was a medium. Well, one day, she came downstairs and told us that she was a medium. She told us that she had a vision, or more, it was more of like an audio vision. I don't know what you'd call that. But she was hearing hairpins falling on tile. And she said that the tile that was in her vision that she saw was your standard black and white chessboard tile, which hasn't been popular since the 70s. Anyway, not long after, we kind of, oh, yeah, okay, whatever, that's fine. Not long after, she moved out. And we have never, okay, my ex-wife has never used hairpins ever. Okay, they started coming, like, popping up everywhere. There was one instance where I was vacuuming, you know, the living room, and I was coming out of an area, like a hallway that had carpet on it, and I vacuumed the entire area. Okay, and I'm vacuuming, I'm going along, and I looked over my shoulder to make sure I had done a good job, okay? And there, laying right in the middle of the floor in the hallway, is a hairpin. Why the vacuum didn't suck it up, I don't know. But it was right there. We started collecting hairpins. We would find them all over the place. They were just popping up. And never until that point, when she brought that up, had this ever happened. Then, one day we were having, like, plumbing problems at that apartment, and the maintenance guy showed up, and we were talking. And he explained how before we had moved in, the floor was tile with black and white checkered tile. They put carpet down. When, this is where it gets crazy, when the previous tenant, who was a woman, a single mom, had a baby who died. And she was distraught and whatever and moved out, and God knows where she ended up. And when they refurbished the apartment, they put carpet in. All right? Now, we were finding these hairpins all over the place. A couple years later, we moved into our current apartment. And one day, I'm sitting at my kitchen table, looking down my hallway, just kind of like thinking about life, you know, and how horrible it was and how much I really wanted a divorce.
You were thinking about the hairpins. Now, sometimes life takes a turn.
No, I was thinking about how horrible my life was and how much I wanted a divorce. Anyway.
Hairpin.
You know that. Yeah, hairpin divorce. Turn. It's the same thing. Right. You know that point. That point you reach in your life where you're like, how did I get here? Anyway.
Your life needs to take a hairpin.
Yeah, yeah. I see where you're going with that. Anyway, yeah, so there I am, staring off into nowhere, looking down my hallway. All right. Middle of the day. New apartment. And I see this small girl, like the exaggerated 5-year-old tiptoe, like they're trying to be quiet. You know, you have 2 daughters. You know what I'm talking about. From across my line of sight, basically going from my son's room to the kitchen, which gives me a direct line of sight down my hallway. I immediately jump up out of my chair, run into the kitchen where, because I honestly thought it was one of my kids, like, trying to be sneaky. There's nobody in my kitchen, okay? But I see this long-haired girl in a striped shirt tiptoeing across the hallway, my line of sight. Now, fast forward a little bit. You know, I got divorced, I have my kids, and for the very first night that they were out of the house, it was so quiet in my house that what I did was I came out and I turned the TV on in the living room, turned a couple lights on, and I'm laying in bed in my room with the TV on. Not the TV, but the computer, because I was watching something on Netflix. And my angle is I have bedroom door, a little bit to my left, a little bit to my right is my computer monitor. Alright? Out of the corner of my eye, to my left, out of, you know, in the hallway, there is a long dark-haired girl standing in the hallway. Well, I really quick, just reflex, I grabbed one of my pillows and whipped it out the hallway, at the hallway. Alright? Now, I am a full-grown man. I am a skeptic. Nothing scares me. Nothing. But
grown-ass man.
I am a grown-ass man. Nothing scares me. Startles me, sure. And that's what it did. So I whipped that pillow. And when I whipped that pillow, that long-haired figure did like it does in the movies where it, like, dissipates in, like, a cloud or, like, a wisp. Okay? Was gone. I have a friend who is a self-proclaimed medium. She's never been to my house. I only know her through Facebook. I don't even remember how we're friends. You know how Facebook is. You've got these people who are on your list and you're like, why are we friends? But we are. I wanted her to come over. She lives here in town. I'm like, one night she put out this thing on Facebook about how she was like offering up her services to anybody interested. I'm like, come over to my house. Yeah. Well, I don't mean those kind of services.
Oh.
Never been to my house. She offers her services. I let her know that there's stuff going on in my house. A few minutes later, she comes back. Not only having never been in my house before, does she describe it perfectly. And then she goes, and the spirit in your hallway is your stepdaughter who had passed away. Keep in mind, she doesn't know that kind of stuff about me. When she said that, She goes, she is just there to make sure everything's okay. I'm like, well, then I apologize for throwing a pillow at her.
This concludes our play for tonight. Unhappily for Paul Schultz, however, there's more to his story, for he subsequently found himself in one of those institutions he had come to fear. Next time, we shall be back with another story. Until then, good night.
And to this day, I am still inexplicably finding hairpins.
Gent who ran amok in Kent. Lately he's been overheard in Mayfair. You better stay away from him. He'll rip your lungs out, Jim. I'd like to meet his tailor. With the queen, doing the werewolves of London. I saw Lon Chaney Jr. walking with the queen, doing the werewolves of London. I saw a werewolf drinking a pina colada at Trader Vic's. His hair was perfect.
Coming to get you, Barbara.